4:55
halfway through the class. So the next thing I want to do was talk about any problems that might be showing up in doing the assignment. What? Pardon? Any problems that might be showing up in doing the assignment? Is there anything that we need to go over about that? Yeah, will
you? You don't really care how we implement the lookup of the information, right?
Right. Focus.
Okay.
Right.
And then also, when you say something like the product name is supposed to be 20 characters or something like that, are you looking for us checking that or just implementing like an array that's sort of just up to?
I'm looking for you to just handle that up to that size. I'm not looking for a lot of error checking here. Okay. Now, it's probably worth saying that maybe I should be, because failure to do such checks is a huge source of problems in the world, and maybe I should be being more aggressive about it. But for this assignment, the point is to get through the system calls mainly, and so let's not worry about it. Okay, I'll let Jack beat you up about error checking. Okay, anything else about the assignment? So some people I notice are turning it in. I also, Chad reminded me this morning that I haven't actually changed the turn-in page, so it still says for, what, assignment one or something. Don't worry about it if you already turned it in, but if you want to hold off until an hour or so after class, I'll fix it, and it will say the right thing, and then it will go in a place that's a little easier for me to deal with. But if you already turned it in, that's fine. I'll get it. Okay.
Well, yeah, one problem with the server and client, sometimes server send data to client, but it doesn't get it like, until the next call to get it. I mean, the first, I don't get what's going on. Sometimes it doesn't get the data sent from server until I call. You know, the next time I call back to the server, it get the old data instead of the new data.
You have to read, you know, you have to put your reads in a loop.
Yeah, but how do we know that the server doesn't send anything and the client doesn't get it? You know,
so the client gets the client just sits there waiting.
Sit until they get the data.
Well, I mean, what behavior are you seeing? Are you seeing the client sitting there just doing nothing after the server has set?
It reads the data from the server, but it doesn't give the data until the next time I do something. It call to give data from server. It gives the old data that's supposed to be there the first time I call the function.
It didn't get it the first time?
No.
Are you saying it got it twice or it didn't get it the first time?
It didn't get it the first time.
So what does that mean? That when you called receive, you got less data than you expected? Or that you got it, or that it sat there and didn't read anything? Pardon?
You get blank data the first time. You get all the data the second time. Yeah, and something I don't get. So I have to handle if there's nothing in the buffer, call it again.
If there's nothing in the buffer, it should not have returned at all.
It returned the number of bytes that I set the maximum byte to return. It is the number of bytes, but it doesn't have any data. It's basically null.
There's something wrong in your code. Okay. You need come by and see me or Vic,
okay,
and show us your code, because there's something wrong. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't tell you that it delivered a certain amount of data and not deliver that amount of data. Like, are you looking?
Say, so I set the maximum buffer to 200 pretty-sec. I'm doing data return to pretty-sec, but there's no data in that array. It's only null data.
What are you trying to send?
Send the response from the server to client.
Yeah.
I had that problem. It would just skip a send when I was trying to send an int, because I had h2ns in there. But if I did it outside and then passed in the address of the int, it would actually send. It was skipping a send, and I get something
out by one. So that's good. I think I understand what happened to you, and you do too, so we can explain it to other people. Whereas I'm not understanding that. Okay, so what you tried to do was you tried to do send h to ns of, say, 4, and 2, and a socket, and 0, right? Something like that. Okay, so let's talk about why that doesn't work, right? The problem here is h to ns. Think of it on a big Indian machine, it's easier, is just 4, right? What does send take as its argument? It takes the address of a buffer. So 4 is not the address. So you need to pass, you need to assign that into something and pass the address of it. Yeah. Okay? So, yeah, I understand that one.
What I thought was weird is it completely skipped it and moved on to the next send. So on the client, I was off by 1.
It completely skipped it. Did you? What did it return?
It was returning. I think it was returning that I was sending. I was having problems with this for a long time. You just came on that page.
Well, it would. It should have returned a -1. And if you didn't check it, then you're bad. If it returned 2, that means that in fact your process has addressability at address 4, and it passed whatever it found there.
Okay.
But I strongly suspect that it returned -1. So check your return codes. All right, check the return values all the time. Okay. Are you checking the return values? Okay. Well, we need to look at your code because I don't think it's doing quite what you think it's doing, but it's clearly not working. So we'll figure it out. Others? Okay. Well, let's talk about the network layer. This is kind of a high-level overview of what's happening in this chapter. The things that we're going to... The service model stuff goes by pretty quickly. The distinction between forwarding and routing is a terminological distinction. I think we'll get over that pretty quickly. How a router works... is certainly interesting, and also how path selection works in a datagram network is sort of essential to how the network works, and we're going to spend enough time on that you'll end up with another project to do related to routing. We'll probably talk a little bit about IP version 6, but not a lot. That's what's happening here. This is just the outline of the network of the chapters. Let's move on. So let's review. The job of the network layer is to transport, to carry a segment from the sending host to the receiving host. I don't want to use transport because we use that for a different protocol. So carry the segment from host to host, right? Whereas the job of the transport layer is to carry it from application to application, or at least from socket to socket. So the segments come from the transport layer above and get, as we say, encapsulated now into the datagrams at the network layer. The receiving side looks in the packets to figure out which transport layer is appropriate for that packet and delivers the segment back up to it. Unlike most transport layers, the network layer plays in every host and every router. Right? The transport layers that we talked about thus far generally don't play in the network layer at all. They're just in the end hosts. And I wanted to add something here. The router examines the IP header fields in the IP datagrams. Okay, so remember we've got the application data and the application protocol, and we've wrapped that in transport, and now we've wrapped that inside IP. Okay, so there are headers here, and then typically even within the application protocol there are headers. Right? And as we go up the stack in the receiver, we strip those off. As we go down the stack in the sender, we put them on. Okay, so this is terminology that a lot of people don't make a big deal about and get kind of sloppy about, in my opinion, and I think Kuroz and Ross are right to call it to the fore. We're going to use the word forwarding to mean the process by which a router decides what it's supposed to do with an incoming packet. Right? So it receives it, it looks inside it, it looks at some of its local state, and it sends it. Okay, that's forwarding. It applies to each packet individually at a single router. Routing is then the process by which the router figures out what its local state should be so that the packets end up in the right place. Okay, so it's a much more global issue. It involves the configuration of the whole network over a longer period of time. So the idea with forwarding is you want it to be just as absolutely fast as you can make it. And the longer packets stays inside a router, the worse off you are. Routing is a much slower process because it involves communication across the whole network to figure out like I say, the organization of the whole network. So, I do think they make too big a deal of it here, but anyway. So, not all network layers are connectionless, datagram-oriented networks. This kind of networking that I began to talk about last time called ATM, asynchronous transfer mode. There are some others that are sort of related, frame relay and X25, are connection-oriented networks. And as you might guess, before you can start sending datagrams between two hosts in a connection-oriented network, there has to be a connection. So what's different from the kinds of connections that we have at the TCP layer is that this is now at the network layer, and all the hosts and routers participate then in these connections. In TCP, the routers are oblivious to the connections. They don't know anything about them. But this being network layer, the routers get involved. Next slide. So what do you get in return for paying for making that connection before you get going? You can press down to the network layer some of the features that we implemented before in TCP at the transport layer. You can press to the network layer things about guaranteed delivery for individual packets, and even latency for individual packets, because you have control over the path that things take. For the whole flow, the connection oriented gives you in order delivery, guaranteed bandwidth, guaranteed jitter, perhaps, all because as the packet is going through the network is aware of what it means, what it belongs to, what it's supposed to do. Okay. Whereas in TCP, the network layer is just oblivious to all that. It doesn't know anything about what you want there. And even if it did, there are no mechanisms in the network to support those things. So different kinds of things that are implemented in ATM, different sorts of guarantees. So just focusing on the internet layer, the service model is best effort, no guarantees about anything. ATM kinds of things that you can have are so-called constant bit rate, variable bit rate, but nevertheless guaranteed. Available bit rate, which is a lot more like best effort, and unassigned bit rate, which gives you almost nothing. Okay, you just sort of get what you get, sort of like UDP. Okay, so we're gonna do virtual circuit networks first. Before we get to datagram networks, just so we get it out of the way. Oops, can't write there. Virtual circuit. Okay, so this connection that happens in a connection-oriented network is often called a virtual circuit. And the idea is it's very much like what happens, I think I said this before, in an old style telephone exchange where you pick up the two ends and somebody plugs the wires together so that you actually have an electric circuit between the sender and the receiver. And you know, it's just sort of raw voltage changes happening there. So a virtual circuit is similar in that you end up thinking of having a sort of a virtual connection at the network layer between the two ends. I guess there are no networks that provide both. I haven't ever thought of whether that's an essential point about whether a network could support both virtual circuits and datagram style. But certainly, if it did, the implications would be throughout the network, not just at the endpoint. Repetitive. So, this is a key point. we're going to see in, and we've sort of hinted at, that in the datagram networks, a packet carries the destination address. Right? It says, I'm a packet that I want to go there. Okay. In an ATM network or other connection-oriented network, each packet doesn't have to carry its destination address. The destination is, you know, we've organized a path between the source and the destination before we ever started. And so the packet only needs to say, I belong to that path. Right? Well, that actually has one interesting advantage. Because, think about it, for an IP datagram, it has to distinguish where it's going in the whole wide world all the time it lives, right? Today's internet with 4 billion addresses, IP version 6 with 4 billion times 4 billion addresses. Every packet carries that information in a datagram network. In a virtual circuit network, I just have to say I belong to a path, and furthermore, it turns out that I don't have to say that I belong to a specific path sort of globally amongst all the paths that exist right now in the whole world. I just have to say which path I belong to at each router that I pass through. And so the VC identifiers can be much smaller, fewer bits. Do it that way. Many fewer bits than an IP address. Okay. So that's an advantage. But there's a downside as well, which is that every router has to know about all the paths that go through it. Okay? Particularly, it has to know. So this is number of paths times size of path data. State. Okay, so we have to have memory in the routers to keep track of all this. And, probably worse than memory, we have to have fast algorithms for finding the appropriate state for each virtual circuit as the packets come through. Okay, so these days, having lots of memory is not really an issue. But it's still the case that you have to search through it or have appropriate data structures for finding it fast, because remember, the router's job is fast forwarding. And that's tricky. Okay. I think, let's see where we are. Well, okay, this summarizes it. So a virtual circuit is a path from source to destination. There's a virtual circuit number assigned on each link of that path, and it changes as you go through over the path, and we'll see how the routers handle that here on the next slide. Each packet carries the VC the current VC number for where it is on the path, and it changes on each link. So, what does a forwarding table look like in such a router? It says, if I get an incoming packet on a particular interface whose virtual circuit number is thus and so, then I'll send it on a particular outgoing interface with virtual circuit such and so. Okay? So that's all it is, right? The routing table. And notice that I could have, let's do another, I want to do another example. That I added to this choosing an incoming virtual circuit number that was the same as a different one, as one on a different interface, okay, has a different set of rules. So virtual circuit on incoming interface 12, virtual circuit 12 on incoming interface 3 is different from 12 on 1. Okay, has a different destination, and we can reuse the virtual circuit number. Means something different. Number 17 on 1 means something different than number 17 on 2. Okay, so it's the combination of the interface number and virtual circuit number gets mapped to a new outgoing interface and virtual circuit number. And those things have to be unique, but they don't have to be unique separately. All right. I think that's what we were going to say about. Yeah, that's. I think that's probably about what we're going to say about virtual circuits. Not going to talk about signaling and all that stuff. Okay, well, have a great weekend. Get those assignments done. I will not be in town Saturday, but I'll be around on Sunday. So if you email me with questions, I'll probably be able to answer. Oh. So it is. Queuing and processing. All right. I missed it.
Okay. So it's the pointer.
That's a point. Email. And what was the one on the
HTTP one?
On the HTTP one? Let me look at that.
I've still got full points, but oh. I think it's 5, 6.
5 and 6. Okay. I'll think about that one.
Because right, I think there'd be 7 total, right? There'd be the first one.
Right.
And then the 6 extra.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't
You don't know what to request until
the first one comes back. There's another round trip full. So it's going to be 7 minus 2.
Yeah, probably should take into account the combined retrievals as well. So
yeah.
It's all pretty sloppy.
Yeah, it seems like it's all pretty approximate.
Yeah. Okay. Would you email me about the 1 point, please?
Mm-hmm. On my computer, I don't have Ubuntu or like the G++ stuff. Mm-hmm. I have Visual Studio, and I'm not sure how. I mean, I just got it here. I used to use Ubuntu at the school I was at before because the computers there had it.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm not sure, like, when you're actually running, you know, after you've, when you're running your program, how to do the arguments in Visual Studio. And I don't know if you know.
I don't know. I think, isn't it part of the run dialog? It's usually, in most of the IDEs, it's part of the run dialog.
Okay. It could be, yeah. I'm pretty new with Visual Studio, too, but it's the only option I had at the moment. So,
okay.
Should I try? I mean, because I do know how to do it in, like, with a command prompt. It's pretty, so maybe I should. But then I don't know, like, for the IP address you have to specify for the computer.
Uh-huh.
Like, if I use one of the computers upstairs, right. What would I do for that?
Well, you can specify its name
okay.
instead of the IP address.
Okay, and then,
And then use NSLOOKUP.
That's right. Okay, yeah, I've done that in my program.
Yeah.
I just
So if you use the name, it should find the IP address for you.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Hi, Corey.
Hi.
Pardon?
I had a really low score.
Yeah.
I think part of it was I had new pins on the last.
Uh-huh.
I had to make sure that, and I didn't have a lot of time to study. I tried to study, but I was just completely exhausted. So I'm gonna really try to get a pin on the last.
Yeah. I think that's kind of essential. I think you pull it out. You have another 2 exams, and you need to do okay on the programming projects, of course. But it can't be like that again. What's the issue about paying attention in class? Is it too dark? Are you too tired? Is it sleep or distractions?
Distractions.
Do you use a computer in class?
Yeah.
Maybe you should put the computer away.
Well, I use it for taking notes. I had problems with this last year, and I ended up taking the wireless card out.
Uh-huh.
So I just have the USB wireless right now.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to try and leave that at home.
Okay.
But I think they have.
All right. So I think that'll make a difference.
Yeah.
Or and if you can't handle that, then I'd say just leave the computer home, take notes on paper, and go home and type them, and you know that would probably be really helpful, actually, especially if you did it with the audio recording. If you took notes by hand, then listen to it again and type them up on the computer, it could be really pretty powerful. Okay. All right. Good luck.
I'm betting that I've been worse than
you. Wait, 260 is like comp 260?
Yeah.
What? Are you even here now?
Yeah, that's 240.
Oh.
260 is assembly language.
Oh.
Last year I fell down the stairs like 5 times. And it was icy.
They had just sort of arranged by the third layer, so she was wet enough that as soon as I started going downstairs, they slipped and fell and pulled a copy of her.
I'm sorry.
So we got to see the next
copy. I had my first Frappuccino in the last year.
You blow a copy and then play a copy and then you play a copy. Ironically, it's no different than the copy machine that they do.
Sorry.